webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Hello, this is Daniel Rouse. Would you welcome with me again the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Lilborn Williams.
Hello, DT. How's that for you?
DT, phone home.
Well, there you go. Phone home, DT. I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. How about you, William Ethan Massengill?
Dan.
I'm going to learn French just for spite.
Bon, monsieur, bon.
Oh, he's already beat you to that one, too.
Yeah, he always does. Yeah, and I know he's cuter, and I know he's younger, and blah, blah, blah.
Bonjour. All right.
The insults never cease.
And a big greeting to all of our listeners across the world, wherever you may be listening from. We're so happy to have you here. And greeting to you listening from the future, 1,000 years down the road. It's the year 2026, so 3026, 4026, wherever, mm-hmm. because we know that you are going to still be here because mm-hmm. God, YHWH, has established a covenant that is everlasting to everlasting. And despite all the doomsday preachers, prophets, scientists, and so on and so forth, we know that there is going to be existence and it's going to continue for thousands and thousands of years. We're confident of that because the gospel is sure.
And I think that the transformation of the mind in that mindset cannot be calculated. Mm. I was just walking down the stairs, and this has been 10 minutes ago, and that whole thought process was in my mind as I was walking down the steps. And the song that I attempted to sing for you with my charming voice, and when we've been here 10,000 years, and I realized, and Ethan's statement came back to me, we don't realize how that 6,000 years in eternity is such a brief amount of time. Mm. 2,000 years is so brief. And it's not measurable compared to eternity. And then we try to figure out what the future might be like. And we've had so many doomsdays that, you know, we're one of the things we're going to eventually grow out of is that, because the and as we grow out of that, people are going to start looking around for, well, we are still here. You know, a 1,000 years from now, 100 years from now, people are already waking up. It's, I mean, my generation has already been through so many failed launches that, you know, we were standing in the floor jumping up and down trying to get lift going or something during one of them. So that in and of itself is just a huge, it's going to cause the brain to think different once we get far enough down the road to where that it just becomes obvious we're here.
Yeah.
You know, like I know we talk a lot about like the what ifs, if Paul's gospel had of taken root from the beginning, and you know, we imagine what that world would have been like, and the tragedy and the misinformation that would have been avoided. But you know, the more we think about it on the scale of eternity, even if this message that we speak of now is realized in 1,000 years, I mean, yeah. It would still be very very rapid transformation.
Mm.
And then as we look back, as we do over life, right? Over my life, you regret the mistakes. And if we'd just known that before that and this before this. But then you realize that without those corrections, without those missteps, we wouldn't know what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, it almost requires that. So 46,000 denominations, let's say we're 46,000 steps closer to the truth.
Yeah.
Just by the process of elimination. That's a brand new one right here on the Gospel Revolution. We are 46,000 steps closer to the truth by the process of elimination.
Well, what did they say that it took Edison, 10,000 trials before he got the light bulb right?
Well, yes, and it was other people doing the trials instead of Edison. Yeah. And then he took all the credit.
Yeah.
But for everybody that's worshiping Edison at the altar right now.
Yeah, I almost feel guilty for giving Edison that much credit, but... what I mean,
as you should.
What I mean to say is the process that went into the final product was thousands and thousands of trial and error.
It was indeed.
So, I mean, this is a process of learning the gospel and adapting to the mind of Christ that we've been given. I mean, it might take us thousands of more tries, but I think eventually the world will wake up.
Yes, it is in the process of it. And it's, you know, fits and lurches. You know, you don't ever go forward. And you don't ever go forward in a straight line. I remember realizing that we basically, to get down the road, we basically fall from ditch to ditch, but we're still going down the road. And, but we're, you know, we're going to get our act together and we're going to start learning, you know, the road that we're walking on, and the ground's going to stop quaking under our feet and the sky's going to stop falling in and all of these things that we have pre-programmed in our brain to be going on. So when we just stop reacting to what's not happening.
Hey, I don't know about you, but the ground was definitely quaking where I'm at.
I know. Yeah.
I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. God almost got you, but it was just one magnitude too short, I guess.
That's mean.
Now we've got a judge.
I told you, I warned you guys, you know, these people, you know.
You think about what you just said about what this
part
the good stuff about what this does to our brain and the stability that it brings about that there is no end in sight. And here we're sitting in 2026, and when I was 12 years old going into the year 2000, I didn't think that we were going to make it past the year 2000. You know, I didn't think I was going to make it to be an adult and have children and all of that. And that's the mindset of, you know, we talk a lot about, Michael, you've said this for years, that the gospel has impacted the people that really took Christianity seriously. Mm-hmm. And when these things were discussed as a little boy, listening to it at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, that was ingrained in me. And I took it seriously. You know, when they said Christ is coming back soon, I took them literally when they said Christ is coming back soon. And in that, you see the effects of it in the planning for life. I mean, I didn't think about life much past being a teenager. Because I didn't even think, I wasn't even sure we were going to make it to being a teenager because of everything that was, all the prophecies that were coming around the year 2000, Y2K, goodness gracious. And I remember attending an event at as we turned into the year 2000, and I was with my buddy Kevin. And before we went to the event, we were went into my bedroom, we got on our knees, and we knelt down and prayed because we were not confident that we were going to make it through the night. We thought Christ very well could be coming back because that's what was being taught. You know, and many of were careful, especially in the circles that I were in, to really come out and say it, but they were saying it without saying it. And obviously enough for a 12-year-old mind to wrap my brain around it and think that. And so to go from that 26 years later to now being of the understanding is that generation after generation after generation after generation after generation and so on and so forth is going to continue. My gosh. I mean, and the outlook on life is beautiful. You know, I think when you're looking for the world to end, you're looking for evil everywhere. And when you're looking for evil everywhere, you see it everywhere. But when you realize that there's a potential and that there is a forever, and the potential of forever is just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful world.
And now Daniel's talking our physics now. So. And he doesn't even know it. He doesn't even realize it.
Yes. Yes.
So you don't even have to see, I have to study. Ethan has to study, but Daniel just talks the talk. He doesn't even have to get involved.
One of the things that we wanted to address here today are covenants. One of the things that we discussed about that is covenants are, the waters are kind of muddy when people think about it. You know, we're going to address six different covenants in the Hebrew scriptures today. Think about that. And some of you are thinking, this six covenants. I didn't know there was two. You know, but there are six different covenants that some came and went. Some parts of them were annulled. Some of them were fulfilled. Some of it played into the other. Some of it canceled one of the others. And you see this whole flow of covenants going throughout. And I think this is really great because next weekend, I want to remind everybody that our conference is going to be released. And we are walking through Samaria. You just mentioned how 2,000 years was so short of a period of time. And we go through 2,000 years of history. We go through the history of Samaria and what happened, starting with Abraham and all the way up through the life of Christ. And a beautiful, beautiful thing that is arranged there. And talk about covenants established, covenants added to, covenants annulled, covenants broken, covenants animals sacrificed, children sacrificed. I mean, so many things have happened in this region called Samaria that we come to know as Samaria. And one of that is, and the kicking off part of that is that covenant that most everybody is familiar with. And that was the Abrahamic covenant, that God made a promise to Abraham that through his seed, righteousness would cover the earth, that through his seed, that his descendants would be as the stars of the sky and the sand of the sea. What a covenant. But before that covenant, there were other covenants established. And it's wonderful to think about the arrangement that God had in all of this. In the 2,000 years that we go through walking through Samaria, and the 6,000 years of our history, the 4,000 years prior to Christ, all beautifully arranged by YHWH and confirmed in the Hebrew Scriptures.
Well, that's going to be a beautiful, this is our last show before the conference. That's just really, really very exciting. So we thought that getting this set aside, first off, let's deal with the most obvious misnomer about this whole thing of covenants. Anybody that has a Bible, a whole Bible, it says New Covenant and Old Covenant, or New Testament and Old Testament. Mm. Both of those identifications are misnomers on each section. There is a New Covenant explained in the New Testament, but the entire thing is not about the New Testament or the New Covenant. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's an awful lot that is got a whole lot of one of the other covenants in it, and it leaves out a whole lot of the covenant that was started from the beginning. So if you've been trained and raised like all of the rest of us have, and there's an Old Testament and a New Testament, and you think that's the dividing line and that's clear, then you're probably in one of 46,000 denominations because it is the muddied waters of that. That's just not true. You do not, that the book does contain an old covenant, and it contains the new covenant. But just because it's on one side of the line and then on the other side of the line doesn't mean either are descriptive of those.
They're probably the most simplistic way that I can think of right off the bat to distinguish that and clear the misnomer is one side you got pre-cross documents, and on the other side you got post-cross documents. Mm-hmm.
Those documents may or may not describe a covenant. And or the covenants that we're talking about. So we're going to jump right in to covenant. Who's got the covenant? Mm. We've got Kenneth Copeland has covenant, he says, and he made a covenant with God, and that he is going to live to be 120 years, even though he got the verse out of a termination for the life of the old world, and that the humanity was going to be destroyed, not live, but be destroyed in 120 years. I remember finding that, goodness, 35 or 40 years ago, because I started hearing this, and it's probably from Copeland and some of the others. You know, God promised us 120 years. I'm sure it was Copeland. And I thought, well, you know, gosh, I need to read that. I just need to get that in me, because if that's promise, I'm going to claim it.
Come on. You know?
And so I went back and I read it, and I think I backed up two verses, Daniel, and that's all.
That's it.
And it said that because of your wicked ways, this is the number of your days, you know, to that effect. And I realized, and I said, so, well, wait a minute. So how long was it? This is before AI. You couldn't just go look. And so, but I started figuring out based on the generations and how old who was and who old was what was what. And it ended up to 120 years from that time. It's like, wait a minute. That's not a promise. That's a declaration of destruction for the whole world. Now, Kenneth Copeland is now 90 years old, and he still uses that verse out of context to say that he has a covenant, a personal covenant. Let us clear this up. No one on earth has a personal covenant with God. And you, by the time we finish with this, you are going to be jumping for joy that you have no personal covenant with.
Yeah, and all the covenants that we're going to mention today did involve man. Man screwed it up.
Almost every single time. Actually,
one
every
could
single
say
time.
Every single time. Yeah.
The first one that comes to mind is obviously the first man that ever walked the earth. He must have had some sort of covenant made about him, wouldn't he? Wouldn't it be called a Adamic covenant?
That is the very first one. And Ethan, why don't you explain to us what that covenant was?
Well, it really was two covenants, the Edenic and the Adamic. Mm-hmm. And I mean, really the way I see that as is just warnings and consequences.
Now, when you say Edenic, what does that mean?
When they're still in the Garden of Eden before they...
So you're saying Eden?
Yeah, Eden. It refers to the Garden of Eden before they were banished. Mm-hmm. So that's really the... There's two parts of that, the Edenic and the Adamic. And I'd say one really leans into warnings. For example, you know, partake of this tree, and then that day you'll surely die. And then mm-hmm. the Adamic covenant would be the playing out of the consequences of that death.
So these two covenants are what we get established about this. Now, it doesn't say they are covenants here in Genesis. What we learn about covenants later on, and the teachings even that Paul did, we learn that these were covenants indeed.
Yeah, because they had conditions and agreements.
Yes, that's what causes us to know that they had, is that they were agreements. So immediately my mind flashes through all of our days in Pentecostalism for Ethan and Word of Faith movement. And that was our whole thing, is agreements with God, you know, being in agreement with God. And if you're in agreement with God, you've got it, you know.
Yeah, and then the, you know, just like with the Adamic consequences, you know, I just remember the turmoil of all the consequences that I put on myself for falling out of covenant, a personal covenant with God.
Yeah, I'll read that here out of Genesis, Genesis chapter 3. This, of course, is after they had eaten from the tree that they were told not to. Genesis 3:14, because you have done this, you are cursed more than all the cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go. He's talking to the serpent. And you shall eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. Then to the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. And to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree, which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat. Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth to you, and you shall eat of the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return.
Wow. So, yeah, right off the bat, I see two huge points. And, you know, I hope I'm not spoiling the end here, but...
Never.
But the first point is this prophecy about the this declaration of the enmity between the serpent and the seed of the woman. And that is actually a prophecy that's fulfilled in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
In the new covenant. And this just dawned on me all of a sudden. When you read that, it finally just clicked in my mind about the pain of childbirth, that also is fulfilled, you know, the groaning and the prophecy, the groaning of the creation, of the birthing of creation, what was it? It was in Isaiah?
Yeah.
About the, no, that was Christ and the final supper, that he described the woman in travail and then the hour of passes, and you know, behold,
that's beautiful,
the child is born. So that's a prophecy of the new creation in this first covenant, the Adamic covenant.
So in each of these we find something that was fulfilled at the cross. Now, one thing that I'd never seen is and I don't even know whether I should say it or not, but if we take out who it was, he actually had a covenant with the angel, the snake.
Yeah, he did.
He made a covenant with him, didn't he?
Yep.
So we found one more covenant. and we know where that covenant with him was resolved. And that covenant with him was resolved at the cross. So talk about muddying the waters. You know, my claim says that Satan has a covenant with God. Yes, he did. And that covenant was death. And the death that was imposed upon man was removed. And the death that was imposed upon the serpent was fulfilled.
I remember our teaching on the autopsy of Satan.
Oh, yes, we did that.
Yeah, we went into...
Oh, my goodness, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we went into the lamentation of the king of Tyre. I'm sure there's... that speaks of this covenant.
Yeah, absolutely. So anybody that's going around saying that they're having problems with the devil today are saying that God did not fulfill his covenant with
him. Come on, preach, brother. Yeah. So we have the fulfillment of that, you know, where it says that and he shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel till all my enemies are made my footstool. You know, that was the fulfillment of that. Paul talks a lot about this Adam, first Adam and last Adam, which is Adam and Christ. And he says that therefore, just as through one man, Adam, sin entered the world and death through sin, and thus sin spread to all men because all have sinned. And then he talks about the law, which is another covenant, which we'll get into here in a moment. Yeah. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who had not sinned according to the likeness and the transgression of Adam, who is a type of him who was to come. And then he goes through this whole, I mean, this was my salvation. You know, if by one man's offense, death reigned, then how much more through the receive the abundance of grace and the gift of righteousness will you reign in life by the one Christ Jesus. Therefore, as through one man's offense, judgment came to all men, resulting in condemnation. Even so also through one man's righteous act, the free gift came to all men, resulting in life. So, I mean, Paul talks about this covenant that was made with Adam, and that's fulfillment that was fulfilled within Christ, because he said this was a type of him who was to come in a way where Adam affected all of humanity. And this was my saving grace, if you will, my saving salvation understanding of my first glimpse into the gospel was to see that if Adam could affect all of humanity, then why can't Christ affect all of humanity? Adam affected all of humanity, even those who didn't transgress, in the same way that he transgressed. So why couldn't Christ affect all of humanity, even though we didn't believe, even though we didn't receive, even though we didn't see, even though we didn't know, in the same way that Christ knew? That was it for me, man. And here I am.
Absolutely right, Daniel. And, you know, if a personal covenant on this side of the cross is the thing that bypasses all being fulfilled in Christ, that's an open declaration that this promise here about the woman and the snake is left unfulfilled.
It is indeed. So what I'm beginning to see here is that the only way to be a part of God is have a non-participatory role. We got canceled out. And you know, I just had this flash in my head. I don't know if it has anything to do with truth or not. But when you quoted that, Daniel, we were talking about, you put the two verses together about Satan and being defeated, and he said, sit at my right hand till I make thy enemies thy footstool. If we take it just based on that verse, Christ defeated Satan sitting down.
Bonk.
Yep. I whip you sitting down, yeah. Boy.
I like that.
This covenant the between Adam and Christ, this is this comparison from all the way from before the foundation of the world. And it gets called a new creation. So you see that even before the creation, we go back before both of the first two covenants and everything is renewed. The complete destruction of Satan, we can already see that in the final covenant. We see the creation as it was. We've got a brand new one, brand new creation. And the curses that came, those curses are lifted. And we'll be telling you more about that as we go. We've only made it through two covenants here. And of course, the thing that Daniel will always have as his anchor in the gospel, as he told you, his anchor in the gospel is Romans chapter 5. Mm-hmm. And that's what rung the bell. That was the domino that fell. That was the fractal that has continually guided Daniel's thinking. Now, for a lot of people, it's really strange. It's something else. But nonetheless, something that we've reminded ourselves of and others forever, and that you don't have to know the whole gospel. All you have to do is know one fractal of it, and it will correct all the rest of the stuff. But you've got to have one element of truth. Now, where does that element of truth have to be? What you know about sin has to be correct, or what you know about righteousness has to be correct, or what you know about judgment has to be correct. Mm-hmm. And see, what Daniel learned is about righteousness. He got that correct in one comparison. Mm-hmm. By one man, sin came in, and therefore by one man, righteousness. So those, in fact, he got the understanding about sin. He learned where sin came from, and then he found out where righteousness came from, and he did the math.
Yeah.
He listened to the story, and he then knew that one fractal of knowledge. And since then, it's all happened the same way. It's happened to Ethan. It's happened to me. The only thing that I'm angry about is it took me 40 years to do it. But hey, that's and of course I'm really delight in every bit of that. As an incredible journey. And the one thing you'll never ever regret, regardless of the path you take to get to the truth of the gospel, you will never regret it.
So as the story goes on, the next covenant that we come across in the story is with Noah. And so we have God coming to Noah and telling him to go build an ark and that he was going to save his family. And then this judgment comes and family are saved with a little bit of every animal. You know, we used to say two by two, but you read the story, it's not two by two. that's a cute in a storybook, but it's not the true story. There were actually many kinds of these animals that came in because they had to eat and they had to do all that. So, but when it was all said and done and the ship landed, Noah built an altar to God, to YHWH. He took of every clean animal and every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And YHWH smelled sweet smelling aroma. It probably didn't smell that good, but it did to God. Then YHWH said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake. Although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, day and night shall not cease.
Yeah, and I have to back it up again because the first Adamic covenant, we already laid out that there was consequences, and what was included in those consequences were the cursing of the ground and the environmental consequences that came with that. And we see in when they get off the ark and God makes a new covenant with the Noahic covenant to the earth, we see the spiritual consequences, as Daniel just read, the man is wicked from his youth. So the spiritual consequences of the Adamic covenant are still intact, but the environmental, the old world consequences from the pre-flood world to the post-flood world were undone, because it says,
"Wow,
I will never again curse the ground for your sake."
Mm.
And then comes seed time and harvest and all of these. One could almost say it was an environmental covenant.
Yeah.
So never heard that before. So we got a covenant with Satan, and we got an environmental covenant now. So, but the covenant removed a curse. And in my decades long research about the flood, I've just always been very captivated by that. And everything I learn about it affirms that it actually did take place. Everything I learn about it, studying physics, studying everything that I can get my hands on, says the flood was a very real event. I was just doing research in mountain building, how mountains broke. And I'm not going to bore anybody with that, but it's very, I was able to figure out that mountains with having strata of different layers of things could only form at very high temperatures, like from 100 degrees to 400 degrees and stuff like that. The only place you find that is inside the earth.
Mm.
And so if the mountain grew slowly, it would have moved it, and it would have taken it out of that temperature zone and other things. It would have, if it only grew slowly, like what we see mountains growing today, if it would have grown slowly, then each of those strata would have been smeared, if you will, because they would have been taken through, if nothing else, just different temperature regions. So the mountains had to go through a rapid process to have layers. You can drive through Colorado, you can go to the Alps, and you see these layers laying there. That means they were fully developed when they were pushed up. And if they had not been, and they know the temperatures at which these rocks form. They know that now. Now that's really quite new science, but they do know at what temperatures they form. And that takes you to different levels of different regions subterraneally. So we did get a new earth. I call it the fracture zone, and the windows of heaven open. And now I can't walk out and feel the sunshine without just thinking out loud, man, we live in heaven on earth. This is, that's 1,656 years. They didn't get this. They got no wind, no rain, no sunshine. It's like boring, but now we have been kissed by heaven. And sometimes it gets out of control, but it has come together. And the issue is that, yes, bringing heaven and earth together can bring conflict. But again, you get the perfect type and shadow in the cross, that Jesus brought heaven and earth together spiritually and removed all conflict.
Mm.
So everything is just a rapid type and shadow of something else. And so the power of that new statement now begins seed time and harvest and seasons. Seasons didn't happen before the flood.
Yeah, that's a great picture and of everything that was not only undone, but what set the stage for the world we live in now. You know, this is the fracture zone and all the wonderful geographical anomalies that have taken place since then. And yeah, so that's really one, I say that's the, like you said, it was an environmental covenant. That's the, it was an undoing of the environmental consequences of the Adamic covenant. And it was also a promise that things would just stay as it is, that the world's not going to be destroyed again.
Yes.
And we also see that promise being fulfilled, not to get ahead of myself again, but we also see that promise being filled at the cutting off of the 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm. So we get both out of the Noahic covenant, and that is we get tremendous changes, but we also can get a new world. We also get a promise that this one is never going to.
Yeah, and you kind of also get a prequel, I would say, with the arrival of the Nephilim right up to the flood, because
mm-hmm.
One of the main reasons for the flood was because they were mixing spiritual and flesh before the appointed time. So not only do you get a new world coming out of the flood, but you kind of also get a prequel of the covenant later established, the spiritual consequences being undone later in at the cross.
Mm-hmm. And what you're going to see here, it's like watching three people make one quilt. So it gets may get a little clumsy, but I think it's coming across really great. So that we're just following along with the structure. We're taking this sequentially. However, it loops back and then jumps forward. And so it really is like an incredible quilting or crocheting or whatever design you might loom. Goodness gracious. But it does. One thing is connected to all things, and all things are connected to every one thing. And that's why a lot of these things are just popping out. It happens to us every time we get on here and we start speaking about the truth. And then suddenly there's things that none of us have seen. So.
I'm just lost visualizing the three of us sitting around making a quilt.
In our rocking chairs.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's just me.
So then the next covenant is, and we didn't really think this through. I mean, I think this is a conference. We could do a session on every one of these covenants. It'd be powerful, beautiful. Absolutely. There's so much to say. But just in this concise period of time that we're looking at these ones today, the next one in line is Abraham. This is one that we've spent a lot of time talking about. Genesis 12:2. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And of course, we don't want to go and not mention the verse that we have been talking so much about this. And that's Genesis 15:6. And Abraham believed in YHWH, and it was accounted unto him as righteousness. So what the highlight of that is, the whole covenant that was made here was not necessarily God and Abraham. It was YHWH and YHWH. And the New Testament writers tell us about that he can make a covenant by no one greater than himself. So he swore by himself. And what do we see here with this covenant with Abraham is he put him to sleep. And in that sleep, as they cut the animals, it was YHWH that walked through the animals while Abram was asleep. What was that a sign of? That this was a covenant that God was making with himself, YHWH with YHWH. YHWH with Abraham's seed, which is Christ, which is YHWH.
Yeah, and at the moment this takes place, Abraham is still uncircumcised. So the promise is extended, by implication of that, the promise is extended past just Israel. This is promised to the entire world. And what's promised is not just from the Nile River in Egypt to the Euphrates River in Iraq, but the promise extends to all the cosmos.
Does indeed. And Paul goes into detail about that and says, not just for the circumcision only, but also the circumcision, because he points out that the covenant was made while Abraham was in uncircumcision.
Yeah.
So the plan was already there, and the foregone conclusion of bringing in all nations. That's one thing. You can only have one way or the other. And that's everybody.
And the, kind of graphic, but the cutting of the flesh and the foreskin, that's, you know, that in my mind, I see that's kind of like the rainbow in the Noahic covenant. It's the seal. I think Paul calls it the seal of the promise.
Yeah, there's so many that you could use. The veil, there's every part of this, even though the circumstances are different, the application of it is exactly the same from dominion to dominion. And even though it just automatically comes out of our mouth, a covenant with Abraham, then as Daniel pointed out, it was not a covenant with Abraham. It was the Abrahamic covenant that was not made with Abraham.
Yeah.
And you almost have to say that deliberately, because we just are not used to that. The reality that Abraham was not involved in the covenant even though, goodness, as much teaching as I've done in this for so many years, that has only become a reality in the last couple of years, that Abraham had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I just had a thought that, you know, we had that wonderful understanding that Abraham kind of God is righteous. So the cutting of the flesh, that would also be an extension of Abraham counting God as righteous then.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's not something happening towards Abraham. It's the cutting of the flesh is the acknowledgement of God's.
He's acknowledging God's righteousness through that, not God that is not acknowledging his. And there's no other verses to back that up. I know that sounds incredibly weird if you've not heard us teach on that in detail. But the thing that we thought it was weird too and had a hard time, but we made sure we went through everything, and especially through the Old Covenant, as it is called, and the Old Testament, and we went through all of that, and we couldn't find any place that talked about Abraham's righteousness. Mm-hmm. It was all about God's righteousness. It was nothing about Abraham's faithfulness. It was all about God's faithfulness. The only one who speaks of it is Paul in Romans 4 and Galatians 3, and he's trying to untangle the mess. And because he knows that that is the doctrine that's been passed down. And if you don't start back before, if you don't start in at least chapter 3, if you start in chapter 4, you will think Paul is just affirming this. God made Abraham righteous through his faithfulness. But to go all the way, you have to start in chapter 3 to be able to see the reality that that is not the direction that this covenant went. And that's the thing that Paul is correcting and coming back to the total conclusion of Romans that he declared all in unbelief, unfaithfulness, all of it had, this is not the way it went. And even in John chapter 12, you know, talking about the, that nobody believed. And then John chapter 12 records that and says, but nobody believed. And why didn't they believe? Because that wasn't God's plan. God's plan was not to have a covenant based on man's faithfulness. Now, if you want to shout right now, you can. But God's plan was never to make a covenant based on man's faithfulness. His plan was always to make a covenant that included man based on his faithfulness alone.
Mm. Yeah. God was faithful and righteous, and Abraham was unfaithful in and out of circumcision.
In every way. Even laughed at God, he and Sarah. I mean, that's it really is quite amazing. So as you go through that, just remember, stop and examine the story instead of just eating what's been handed to you, that God declared Abraham to be righteous because of his faithfulness.
Yeah, and as this is all YHWH to YHWH, the next covenant is quite different, because the next covenant now is the Mosaic covenant, which is all the list of commandments, mm-hmm. all of the you choose you this day whom you're going to serve. Here is the Ten Commandments. Follow them and you'll prosper. You'll be blessed. Don't follow them. And guess what's happening again is now we get the curse. The curse now is again amplified. And what we're seeing now in this covenant, as we go back to Romans chapter 5, Paul said there, and I just read it, is that sin was still here because of Adam, but it was the law that amplified it. And it was the law mm-hmm. that applied it to their account. It was the law that applied it to them. The other interesting thing about the Mosaic covenant is who it was to. Mm-hmm. The Mosaic covenant was what we have with the Noahic covenant. That was for everybody. That was for all of humanity, all of the earth, and all of the animals. The Abrahamic covenant is also for all the earth. All the nations of the earth are blessed in you. The Mosaic covenant, though, is different. The Mosaic covenant was just to Israel.
Startling. So here is where a lot of offshoots of the 46,000 denominations comes in a what's called Israel-only doctrine, and that Christ died only for Israel and only for the Jews because we were never under the law. But the conclusion of the work of the cross wasn't just because of the law. It was because of all to wrap up all of the other covenants mm-hmm. before, and the fulfillment of the Abrahamic covenant. So, and this is where that Israel-only people miss it. They only see two covenants. They see the two covenant, they see the new covenant, and they only compare that to the Mosaic covenant. And if there was only two covenants, then you can't even do that. You can start out with Israel-only, but if you follow the story that we're going to take you through in the walk through Samaria, you'll see that even this covenant would have, and what does in the end, include everybody. Even through the Mosaic covenant, even though the law was not given to the whole earth, it was given, the whole earth is not involved, as Daniel's pointed out in the others, the whole earth was not involved in these, but then you find out, God had a sneaky way of pulling everybody into this mosaic.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. And yes, the Mosaic Covenant does single out the Israelites, but Paul makes it clear that the Gentiles become a law unto themselves. You know,
yep.
I mean, both parties had the knowledge of good and evil. Mm-hmm. So they had the ability to judge one another without the being righteous. You know? So there was that same issue. It was that we were unrighteous.
Yes, even the chosen people, unrighteous, no different from the Gentiles, as Paul explains when he's using this covenant as a comparison. He says there is no, under the Mosaic covenant, there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. So our Israel only friends, they're standing on a postage stamp and trying to pretend that they know something that they don't. But you really are standing on a postage stamp to think that the Mosaic covenant includes Israel only, and therefore Christ died only for Israel and the Jews.
And as we go through the conference next week, you're going to really enjoy that part of it, because it was Israel and Judah's involvement, and that statement will make sense more as we go through the conference too. Their involvement and the breaking of the law even was our, and I'm speaking about the rest of the world, all of the nations, us Gentiles, it was our salvation as well. We were wrapped up in that. And that's part of the thing that we will walk you through, is how did the Gentiles get wrapped up in the new covenant? Mm-hmm. Because Jeremiah, we want to share this just as a preview for next week. Jeremiah prophesies this. He says, I'm reading Jeremiah 31:31. Behold, the days are coming, says YHWH, and I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand and led them out of the land of Egypt. My covenant. And so we know that that is the Mosaic Law, very specifically, because it was when right. they were coming out of Egypt, that's when the Mosaic Law was established. So this is not a covenant that is, he's not talking about an end to the Abrahamic covenant. He's talking about something mm-hmm. that's going to supersede the Mosaic covenant. My covenant, which they broke, though I was the husband to them, says the Lord. But pointing out there that there's a covenant between the house of Israel and the house of Judah. But mm-hmm. you might be thinking Judah was a part of Israel. Well, there was a time where and at a long time in the Hebrew scriptures that we see that both of these groups are addressed separately and at different yeah. times. And then there's a promise that these groups are going to come back together again. So there was something that was broken, something that was brought back together. And all part of that is tied in with the walk through Samaria.
Yeah, before the end of the first temple period, just another little teaser here. Before the end of the first temple period, up until that time, an Israelite included all 12 tribes. But near the end of the first temple period, that was no longer true. God himself, YHWH, declared Israel and Judah to be two separate entities. Mm. And it's repeated many, many times,
many times
that they are separate entities. And we'll show you where that Judah attempted to claim the title of Israel, but that title was never given by YHWH. So, and we remind you through this entire conference, we're talking about ancient history. We're not talking about today. And, but you're, the way we see everything is based on whether or not we have our history right. And this is a very important correction in history about, Judah and, Israel. And we go into greater detail than I expected to. This was not a part of the plan, on my part when we went into this conference. We were expecting to see some great things about, Samaria, and the vast majority of the Bible stories that you know took place in the area that is called Samaria, and even into this day, and the fact that Samaria was the only one that kept the Paleo-Hebrew before they started changing it. And that's going to be we got to stay out of the conference, right? So, Daniel.
Before we leave this Mosaic covenant into the last one we want to look at, I want to bring a statement that Paul brings out of Galatians 3:17. And he says this, that the law, speaking about the Mosaic law, the covenant with Moses, which was 430 years after what? Mm-hmm. After the Abrahamic covenant, cannot disannul. It can't change it. And what can it do? Mm-hmm. It cannot make the promise of none effect. What was the promise? That was the promise to Abraham. So what he's saying is that, yeah, there's two covenants here, but one is older and one is not going to change. And then what do we see the fulfillment of that? He goes on into Galatians chapter 3 and beautifully tells us why the law was there. It was to captivate and to hold humanity in sin until the seed should come. And then he said, that seed is Christ. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's heir, an heir according to the promise. So it was all, and you see that with the covenant. We saw it with Adam, Eden, and Noah. You see how they built upon each other. They helped each other. They resolved each other. And that's what we're seeing even here through Moses and Abraham, is the resolve and the building upon to the next one.
Yeah, so the Abrahamic covenant is the covenant that superseded
the covenant. Mm-hmm.
That superseded the Mosaic covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Mosaic covenant wasn't designed. It was designed to show the world that you're not going to get the promise from the Abraham covenant by your own means.
Yeah,
yeah.
It had to be YHWH to YHWH because you can't do it, man.
So the comparison there is so powerful. Paul literally states, and when Don Bartlett pointed this out to me, I thought he was crazy. But it's right there in chapter 3, and Daniel just explained it to you. So and Christians think they've got to keep the law. It is so amazing. The law is that thing that makes you think the covenant is canceled out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole mindset of the Mosaic covenant, is to point out you ain't going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
The Mosaic covenant points out that you don't have enough faith, you don't have enough obedience. That's what creates a denomination. It's an instruction that you think within your own righteousness that you can somehow qualify for obedience to the Mosaic covenant. But here is what Paul says implicitly about, as he's comparing, that the Abrahamic covenant cannot be canceled out by the Mosaic covenant. And he states it clearly. Your obedience and your unbelief cannot cancel out the covenant with Abraham, with God himself. It superseded in every way. It preceded. It was greater in every way. It was greater. It would be nice if Christianity would mix the Abrahamic covenant with their Christianity, but they've mixed their Christianity with the Mosaic covenant.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they're constantly measuring their belief, your belief, unbelief, faith, no faith, got some faith, obedience, disobedience, because that's what that later and secondary and temporary covenant was to reveal, was that none of these will have an effect to help you, and it also cannot disannul the covenant that YHWH made pertaining to Abraham, who he made that covenant by himself. And Hebrews makes it very, very clear that by the fact that he could swear but no greater, he swore by himself. What covenant is he talking about? He's not talking about he is talking about the new covenant by virtue of the fact that he was talking about the Abrahamic covenant. Because that covenant was to Abraham and his seed. And Paul made that also very implicitly clear, that that is not to Abraham and his seeds, those that are under the law.
Yep.
That's what Paul's emphasis is.
Mm-hmm.
The Abrahamic covenant did not pass through the Mosaic covenant at all. It superseded it.
Mm-hmm.
This is where Christ was reigning in heavenly places for 1,000 years. So where was Christ when the Mosaic covenant was going on? He was reigning in heaven. Based on the covenant made with made for Abraham and the seed, until the seed comes.
Yeah, you mentioned Christianity, and I'll add to that Judaism. Christianity mm-hmm. and Judaism both hold on to this Mosaic covenant, which is really interesting about all of the covenants. The one that we learn about that comes to an end, that is terminated, and the Bible uses that term, those terms, a terminated, comes to an end, is very clear about the Mosaic covenant, specifically the laws and commandments. But also in addition to that is we find the fence laws are also dealt with at the cross. And what is that? That's Judaism that was tagged on to the Mosaic covenant. It wasn't the Mosaic covenant, but it was a religion that developed out of that. You're going to find the inception of Judaism. Judaism, historically, we're going to show you in your Bible. you're going to read it with your own eyes where the inception of Judaism came from and the time frame in which it did. But to realize also that in the New Covenant, when Paul writes about it, he's talking about the laws contained in ordinances. He's talking about these man-made, fence-made laws. These were the things that were nailed to the cross. So there was a fulfillment, but there was also a termination. But it's Judaism and Christianity that keeps it going, even into today. Judaism took it before the cross. Judaism and Christianity pulls it past the cross. And what Judaism and Christianity does is it blinds you to the real covenant. The real covenant is that's when Paul talks about in Corinthians, he says that the blinders still remain on the eyes today. What is that? It's by not seeing the fulfillment, the completion, and the termination of that which was before, and now walking into what is real.
Beautiful,
today.
Daniel. Beautiful. And that the law, the Mosaic covenant, will still blind a person to this day.
Mm.
And you will not find a denomination that does not include the Mosaic Covenant in their belief system. And that means that they are completely blinded to the covenant that supersedes that one, as Paul made it very clear in Romans and in Galatians. These are the two books where he taught that your faith is not necessary and your belief is not necessary and about the grace of God. But the blinding effect that the law has, if you incorporate the Mosaic Covenant into your beliefs about Christ, you will be completely blinded to the all-encompassing nature of the work of the cross.
Wow. Okay, there's one more. The Davidic Covenant, and this is concerning kingship. And this was the promise from YHWH to David. He says, "Thy house and thy kingdom shall be established forever before thee, and thy throne shall be established forever." Huh, that's kind of interesting, because as you walk through the history, his monarchy collapses, Jerusalem falls, it gets handed over multiple times. You're going to hear some of that in the conference. I mean, I kind of got tired of seeing Jerusalem get ransacked so many times, because it happened over and over again. And you're telling me that David's kingdom is going to be no end? What was that all about?
Well, you know, just as the Mosaic covenant was superseded, this Davidic covenant, this physical kingship was superseded with a eternal spiritual kingdom.
Yes.
The spiritual kingdom that brought down every other kingdom. You know, we have that beautiful image of the statue and the feet of iron and clay and the stone coming out of heaven and tearing that whole structure of authority and physical kingship apart. And and it's funny because I say it's superseded because it's also the very ideal of kingship is found in the Mosaic covenant as well. So this desire for a physical kingdom that's also found in the Mosaic covenant is superseded with a spiritual covenant, with the Abrahamic covenant, and a eternal kingdom in Christ.
The eternal kingdom, absolutely. Very well said. So you've got a spiritual kingdom and a spiritual covenant that neither of them were to end. The king, and David was only king 7 years, 40 years. And then after that 40 years, and you get Psalms 110:1, just as he is taking his position, my Lord said to YHWH, said to YHWH, set at my right hand until thine enemies are made thy footstool. Within less than 40 years, David was out of there, but guess who was still reigning? That Christ was, YHWH was reigning, even though all of this took place. And back to Ethan's point, I'm not sure you've made it on the show, Ethan, but you were making it as we were talking, but that all of those, every time that Israel disobeyed, and then they got the consequences, and then they got the restoration, that was prophesied, in most cases, at least 100 years before it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like I was saying, even the desire that they would want a king was encoded in the law.
Yeah,
and the rules about how to be a king are also in the law before they even, I mean, God explicitly says it, because you denied me, you're going to want a king like all the rest of the nations of the earth. So here's the law on that.
So the entire world is irrevocably and completely redeemed, completely outside of our own efforts. And this is not revocable. It cannot be undone because human race had nothing to do with this covenant.
Mm. Wow. I just saw it. So yeah. So the physical kingdom is off the table then completely.
Absolutely.
Because that is a requirement of the law, which is a covenant that wasn't designed for us to keep.
Mm. Exactly. It was designed to show us we couldn't. And to take physical kingdom off of the table.
Wow.
But some people don't know when to quit.
I know. I'm trying to stop my ways.
Yeah, that crown just is not going to sit real well on your head.
Give me the one of thorns then.
Don't tempt me. Oh, goodness. Well, and we love you guys just as much, too. So. Oh, goodness. We've got this conference that's coming on the heels of this show. Mm. We are, financially, this conference needs to be a success also. If it is as successful financially as it is in what you're going to gain out of your understanding and the absolute solid, firm foundation you're going to walk out of this with, knowing things you never knew that you needed to know, because that's how we walked into it. We found out things we didn't know we needed to know. And now we don't know how we made it without knowing those things. So, but we do need a financially successful conference. So not just from our folks in Canada, they always come through for us. And we've got so many people that are so incredibly generous and helpful in here in the States and other places. And we are asking you to stop and think about what it means to you to get this message out to other people, because we have no other hook for you. We don't have a, you know, a promise that God's going to take care of you if you take care of us. That is not in this covenant. And the power of the covenant you're in, though, gives you the freedom and the ability to make choices, what you do with what is yours. So, guys, Daniel, have we done all the covenants?
We sure have. Eden is lost. Adam brings death. Noah preserved the world. Abraham received the promise. Moses governed the covenant nation. David received the kingdom promise. The old covenants passed away. The promise reaches the nations, and the covenant with death does not stand.
So we've haven't even talked about the one we got right now, and that all of those were fulfilled in the cross.
Yep. But,
and every degree of it, which that's what you're going to learn the most out of this conference, is, again, you're going to learn how many more things, substantial volumes and wealths of information of what all was fulfilled at the cross. And just like Paul said, in that he saith a new covenant, he maketh the first old. But when you're talking about the context of that first, is not first covenant. He's talking about the one immediately before the new covenant, which was the Mosaic covenant, was made old. The Abrahamic covenant was not made old at all. In fact, it was fulfilled in the work of Christ.
The Noah covenant was not destroyed. The earth is still here. And by completion of the new covenant, God kept his promise of preserving the whole world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and this wasn't a movement from one religion to another or one set of commandments to another. It was a movement from death to life. And that is righteousness is life. Death is sin, and sin is death, and righteousness is life, and life is righteousness. We went from death to life, from sin to righteousness. And that's the progression that we watched in these covenants that were made throughout history.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for listening. And this is wrapping up. The next thing that you're going to be hearing next Friday is walking through Samaria. There's 9 sessions. So you're going to have to stay in Canada a little while longer this year. So we have 9 sessions. Or you can listen to, Daniel's got a sneaky way where you can listen to all of them immediately if you want on Friday. We're not telling anybody that. But Daniel will explain it to you.
Yeah, if you want to get the top of everything, 2 things you want to do is you want to subscribe to our newsletter. You can do that by going to gospelrevolution.com. and hit the newsletter button and hit subscribe and put your email address in, and you'll get all the updates for all the sessions as they're coming out. You'll see that over 9 days. You'll see different ones come through. But if you want a secret, wink, wink, go to youtube.com and search for Gospel Revolution and the number 1 and subscribe to that page. And if you are a subscriber, you're going to get early access to all that, every single one of those episodes, every session is going to come to you, and it's going to be available right away at the beginning of the conference. And so you can binge watch next weekend if you want. And so it is. We must leave you, family and friends. If you'd like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. You can find us on your favorite social media network, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Again, be sure to hit that subscribe, share, and like button on each of these platforms you're listening. Now, it's good night from Daniel Rouse in the frozen tundra.
And it's good night from Michael Williams here in Clarksville, Tennessee. And we look forward to seeing you on the walk through Samaria.
And it is good night from William Ethan Massengill in the capital of Salsa, Cali, Colombia. I'll be dancing my way over to the conference with you guys next week.
9 sessions, so make sure you bring some extra money for the buffet this year. We sure hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week, only
better.
Since you're knocking on the door, you're begging to come in, yeah. Unaware that all the wildness been knocking from within. You are the love you seek, a perfect yet unique, right? Righteous, holy. Gotta be nothing to complete. It's not a thing that you need, you're the love. Just remember to breathe and take a second off. Look, I'm just trying to remind you that you're perfectly divine. Flawlessly designed. When you feel lost and
deconstructing religion and barbecuing the sacred cows of Christianity before your very eyes, you are listening to
The Gospel Revolution.